Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here. We had a big day today in the Florida House. The biggest thing we did was not host the Lombardi Trophy, although that was pretty neat to have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization represented, particularly having the Lombardi Trophy on the floor today. But the most important thing we did today, in addition to getting our budget in the proper posture for conference, was to pass the most robust proposal that impacts flooding and sea level rise in the United States. For years, I've been saying that Florida can be a national example for resilient communities. I mentioned it in my designation speech. I penned an op-ed along with Senate President Simpson this summer about it, and we announced our agenda alongside many members recently in St. Petersburg. With the passage of Representative Posada Cabrera's flooding and sea level rise bill today, we have delivered on that goal. Florida is home to 7 of the 10 cities with the largest property losses at risk from flooding in America. And while some continue to debate word choice, we've rolled up our sleeves and found real solutions to a real problem. For the first time, Florida will have a statewide plan to address flooding, and we will dedicate $100 million a year to that cause. We want to appreciate our partners in the Senate who worked really hard on this product along with us and for getting it done so early on in session. I'm proud of the work that Representative Posada Cabrera's bill is now headed to the governor's desk for signing. We are one step closer to the goal that we've been talking about now for many months, that we should be always ready. Today we also passed our House budget, and we're now getting into the position for a productive conference with our Senate partners. I've invited Chairman Trumbull here today to some availability to answer your questions. But before we get to your questions, I'm going to offer him some make some comments about the budget.
So thank you, Speaker. First, I want to thank the appropriations staff and our committee members. You know, the Speaker's goal this session with the budget was not to go spend money on a tremendous amount of member projects, but to focus on legacy issues. Now, the fact is our state's continuing to grow, and we need to prepare for that growth. The fact that the governor made bold decisions early on in the pandemic to keep our state open really put Florida in one of the best positions to be able to succeed from a revenue perspective. You know, each of our subcommittees were faced with a difficult decision with estimates that we received back in December. And in order to prioritize the state's revenue, the state's recurring expenses, and prepare for the future. Obviously, targeted reductions were made in areas that had greatest flexibility, particularly those that received substantial direct federal funding. These reductions allowed us to fund the critical needs, obviously, for our state. We set forth a plan to invest Florida's share of the federal COVID relief in a one-time expenditure. We put $1 billion in the Emergency Preparedness and Response Fund as a way to prepare for future emergencies. And most importantly, we shored up our reserves and put in excess of $5 billion in reserves. This is a balanced budget that reflects our beliefs and that our state should not spend more than it takes in. We have an obligation to prepare for Florida's future. Look forward to working with our partners in the Senate in the coming weeks to provide the best budget for the governor's signature. Thank you, Speaker, for this opportunity very much. Questions for me or for the Speaker?
Chairman, about the new recurring revenue that the new reductions that we see, is that going to help the cuts to Medicaid? I think you guys have $300 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things could have the potential of changing with the new revenue numbers. But you know, what you have to look at is a lot of those, you know, Medicaid cuts are recurring cuts. And a lot of the new general revenue numbers are non-recurring revenues at $1.5 billion that came in. So I think we still have to continue to look at where we have a lot of flexibility. No, we prescribed how we were going to spend the majority of that money in the back of the bill. $3.5 billion in deferred maintenance, $2 billion to shore up a battered state transportation trust fund. We put
deferred maintenance can be a lot of things. Are you like line item sort of items you can use that money for?
Yeah, I think that's what we'll use the conference process for to come up with specific proposals. Yeah, I would imagine that that'll be something that we focus on in conference.
Of course, but I'm just saying there's never going to be a House priority list. You're not going to line up House's priorities for that spending. It's just going to
Well, yeah, but Matt, we sort of did. I mean, we prescribed where we think a lot of the dollars should go in a very forward-focused way, and I don't believe the Senate even prescribed any of the spending.
You say $3.5 billion
for deferred maintenance. That's, you know, obviously a broad categorization. I'm just wondering about how you're going to spend that. Sure. Yes, I would, you know, to your point, yeah, I'd imagine that we are going to look at specific proposals associated with those individual line items.
You know, I wonder if you could address this issue, and you heard it in some of the amendments that were put forth there by Democrats today and yesterday as well. But the idea that you could be creative with some of this money to make it more recurring, possibly. You could bank this money and spend it on some of these health and social programs that in this state for decades have been lacking. Instead, you're putting it into some of these, you know, back of the bill items where deferred maintenance, does the state really have $3.5 billion of deferred maintenance that needs to be paid?
Sorry.
Yeah, John, I think that, you know, first of all,
there, it, not be helped more by this money rather than putting it into.
No, I get the question. I think that, you know, you can't make non-recurring money somehow recurring, right? It's one-time money that the federal government has sent down. So for example, you say, you know, deferred maintenance, and Chairman Trumbull, I think, characterized it correct, which is what the House's proposal was to look at the items that are one-time things. This is one-time, non-recurring money that has been sent down from the federal government. So what are the one-time needs of the state that we can invest in, realizing that there's not going to be another $3.5 billion behind the $3.5 billion in deferred maintenance. So to answer your question about deferred maintenance, the answer is absolutely. I know that's shocking that we have that much money out there in deferred maintenance on the things that we own as a state, but we do. One of the reasons that, you know, in conversations with Chairman Trumbull and the committees, and we decided to include that, is exactly for that reason. You know, it's not something that politicians get terribly worked up about. You know, I ran for office and we're going to do deferred maintenance. Probably not something you're ever going to hear, nothing you're ever going to write about. It's not a very sexy topic. Nobody gets to show up at a ribbon cutting that says, look at the brand new roof. No one does that, which is why we focused on it. Because if it's going to be one-time money in this sum, this is an opportunity for us to get, you know, this massive snowball that's heading our direction of all these buildings and things that we haven't, prepared to fix and begin to do that.
If I could follow up with that, you know, a lot of people would also think it's shocking the waiting list for an agency for persons with disabilities in this state. Yet there doesn't seem to be an urging to try to figure out some way to make this money.
Sure, I'll give Chairman Trumbull the opportunity to give some specifics on it, but I'll say this again. You're asking a question about a recurring expense. When you take care of someone's health care, when you start to do those things, that is a recurring expense. I'll give an example, and I think the chairman will give you some additional details on it. But what we're doing, for example, in Medicaid to help mothers of newborn babies, we're extending what I think was created in 1976 from 2 months of coverage to 12 months. That is a recurring expense. We are going into that with the realization that this is something now that we are taking on in a recurring way year after year after year. So when we do that, we have to go in, you know, to the deep end of the pool. What you're suggesting are additional recurring expenses, and what we've gotten from the federal government is one-time money. You want to talk more about APD?
So, I mean, everybody that we defined as critical, you know, we funded in the House budget. But I think it would be incredibly short-sighted to put people, use non-recurring money to put folks, take folks off the waiver or put them on the iBudget waiver, and then next year have them lose their services. I think that would be incredibly short-sighted for us as for being fiscally responsible, one, but also to take care of people's needs. I don't see a need or see that there's a real reason that we would take non-recurring money, put people on a program, and then have to make a decision to maybe even cut health care in another area to be able to fund that recurring need in the future.
Super Brown, we have a two-part question on that. There's a bill Senator Bracey offered on expunging the records of people convicted of marijuana possession. He said that he changed the bill to make it so that Florida could only get one crack at the apple of getting one record expunged after negotiations with your office. Is that true? Was that the result of negotiations with your office?
We've talked about that conceptually. I haven't seen the language that he's referred to, so I can't tell you whether or not, you know, it reflects a meeting of the minds between us. I'm not sure we have a meeting of the minds. We talk conceptually about, you know, I think second, his issue was somebody gets a second, you know, possession of marijuana charge. How do we handle that? I think there was a discrepancy as to whether or not what we had talked about was covered currently under the law. So, you know, I'm happy to talk with Senator Brayson. We've talked about those issues and several others.
Very generally, like, in favor of expungement?
We've actually done a lot of work on expungement and expunction in the House. When I chaired House Judiciary, you know, I worked with Representative Latvala, and we did a whole, you know, expungement process. There used to be an opportunity where, you know, you had a juvenile who was arrested, you know, brought to, you know, a jail or juvenile detention facility. And while that person might have gone in diversion, so they were never actually convicted of anything, the challenge was they'd go apply for a job, somebody does a background check, and it pops. Right, so now they can't get the job because they saw that they were arrested, even though they were never convicted. The House, I think, led the way in that respect, and we created kind of a dual track so that if that happens today, you know, a juvenile goes to a detention facility, they go into what we call prevention web. So it's a separate, you know, separate database, so that they, you know, that never pops on their record. It's not a conviction. So, you know, I have long, and the House has long been, you know, a proponent of making sure that those kinds of things, you know, don't impact people the rest of their life.
I just wanted to get you worked with him in the past, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the allegations against him and the fact that he has steadfastly denied them.
Yeah, I saw Matt a couple weeks ago. He came by to introduce, you know, his fiance to me. You know, I don't have any, you know, any reaction to it. You know, Gary, I've read the articles like all of you had. You know, I don't have any of the facts. I haven't seen any of the investigations. You know, I'm a former prosecutor, right? So when things pop up in the legislature about criminal justice policy, I always say, well, where's the police report? What's the police report say? What are the facts? You know, I'm assuming that will all come to light. I hope for everybody involved, it comes to light very, very quickly. Well, we're going to see how things, you know, things go in conference. I think I actually, you know, I kind of like how we're lined up with the Senate. I think that, you know, the differences are, you know, are really not that stark. And as we get into that position to negotiate with them, I think that, you know, we're in a good spot to do that.
You know, on the resilient Florida, have you had much interaction with the governor on the direction that you're going?
Yeah, we've talked to the governor's office a great deal. I'm not going to speak for them or speak for their position on the bill, but what I will say is that the governor has consistently been a very, very strong partner on, you know, pro-environmental policy and pro-policy that really looks out for the state. So, you know, he continues to be a great partner in this respect, and we hope he'll sign the bill. Yeah, well, you recall our rules are pretty narrow in that respect, right? So in order to kind of be in the game in the House, we changed the rules to say that you had to have at least a half. You know, you have to be funded by half. So if you put in $1 million project, if you're not in the House budget at, you know, $500,000, you're not alive. You got to be in both budgets to be, you know, to be in the game. Look, I think I'm really proud of what we've done. You know, I got to say it. You know, Chairman Trumbull actually had to go out and make sure it happened and do the work. But, you know, we had the lowest number of member project requests that we've ever had since we started keeping track. We have the lowest number of funded projects in the House budget than we've ever had since we started keeping track. So it was the members really took to heart the fact that we were coming into a really, really tumultuous time, and we had asked them to keep that in mind when they put in member projects. You know, it's a testament to the chairman and to the members that they heeded that advice, and I'm proud of the fact that we have limited the number of projects significantly. Yeah, I can tell you this. Nobody's looking at $2 billion and saying to themselves, how much of that can we spend on projects? That's not nowhere near where our thought process is.
The Senate has proposed the closure of the Dunes, and I know that in the budget proposal that was rolled out by the House, it makes it a little bit optional. The Corrections Secretary has been fairly vocal about his disappointment with those proposals. Where are the negotiations going on, and is that a realistic proposal to close down a prison and potentially
I think it's interesting that you had, you know, the Police Benevolence Association, who represents the prison guards, right, who came out and said, you know, we agree, we think that you can, you know, you can close some prisons based on staffing, et cetera. I've spoken to Secretary Inch. I know his concerns. I think that the approach that we took in the House budget, to your point, was we believe it. We believe that they can do this. We think it's going to be more efficient staffing. And that this is a way for us to deal with some of those issues. So we gave the incentive. You know, if you can figure out a way to do this, to do it safely, to do it efficiently, then you can take the savings and use that on salaries in the prison, which we of course all know is a challenge. So we used a carrot approach for DOC to figure out, is there a way to do this?
But would it be a requirement to demolish the prison?
That we didn't address that in the budget. I have not had a chance to look at it yet. I've certainly had conversations about a gaming commission in the past, and that's something that is very attractive to me. I think I share President Simpson's affinity for the idea of a gaming commission, so long as it is, you know, it is real, it is aggressive, it, you know, it's a real gaming commission. I think that that's something that could have a benefit. Yeah, look, it's certainly not a criticism in any way of DBPR. I think that gaming is very complex. You know, you go to states who are very, very accustomed to regulating gaming, that like New Jersey or Nevada, right, they have very, very rigorous, it's a very serious thing, the Gaming Commission. And I think it carries a great deal of weight. DBPR regulates a lot of things for the state of Florida. You know, one of the many things they regulate is gaming. Do I think that there's a benefit of having a very specialized regulator in the gaming space? Yeah, I think that has benefit, especially considering the level of sophistication that's happening out there, both in the legal gaming space and the illegal gaming space. We don't talk about the illegal gaming space a lot, but you have online gaming happening, you have online sportsbook happening in the black market. I've had some conversations with some cyber experts as to, you know, we do this in other ways where we have the telecommunication companies take off those you know, access to those servers. That's not something that we've done in gaming. I'm not sure it's possible, but I do think it's something that a very specific regulator could look into. We have household fight going on here, John. On the Piney Point issue, you know, I've met with Representative Robinson. I've spoken to Senator Boyd. You know, obviously, we're all, you know, greatly concerned about it. They were on site. I've spoken to them. You know, we're going to look at it in the budget process, but certainly we want to make sure that, you know, that that situation is contained, that it's under control. I'm very particular, very personal to me. That water, you know, some of that water is dumping into Tampa Bay. Where I'm from. So this is something that we take seriously. As you know, we did the hearing in the pandemic committee to start to look at those issues. We want to, you know, make sure the company is held accountable, both monetarily and otherwise, and make sure that we're doing what we need to protect Tampa Bay. Thank you all. Appreciate it.